after the Gezeirah, after the decree that the Jews will have to stay in the Midbar for 40 years. So Moshe Rabbeinu recalls the following story. Vatanu vatomru elai. And you, again, the double meaning of the word vata'anu, you answered me and you afflicted me by telling me the following. Chatanu, chotonu la'Hashem. We have sinned against Hashem. Anachnu na'ale v'nilchamnu. So now we are ready to go. Meaning, what was the sin against Hashem? That we didn't appreciate the present that He gave us, the land of Israel. So now we are ready to go up and fight. Kechol asher tzivonu Hashem Elokeinu, the same way that Hashem commanded us before the miraglim, that we should go up right away. So even though Hashem said now that we shouldn't go up, but we are ready to follow the original command. And they didn't wait for an answer. And vatachgeru ish esklei milchamto, each one got ready for war. Vatohinu lalo sohoro, and they were ready to go up the mountain, to go up to Eretz Israel. Vayomer Hashem elai, so Hashem said to me, Emor lohem lo sa'alu velo silochamu, don't go up and don't fight. Ki eineni bekir bechem, because I'm not amongst you. Velo tinoku lepnei rechem, and unless you listen to me, you will get you will be killed by your enemies. And I told you that, I warned you that you're going to get killed. Velo shmatem, you didn't listen to me. Vatamru espi Hashem, and you rebelled against Hashem. Vatozidu, vatozidu comes from the word mazid. Vatalu orov, bemazid, meaning you, what does the word mazid mean? You knew what you were getting into, as opposed to shogeg, that you don't know what you are getting into. Vatozidu, you knew what you were getting into. It's not that you have made a mistake. Vatalu orov. And the Emor went out, Likraschem, and they went after you, Kasher Taseno Advorim, and they attacked you like bees. So the Gemara says, Rashi went down, why like bees? Because when a bee stings you, it dies, right? So therefore, we know that even though the Emorim were able to kill the Jews, but they got killed, and those that killed Jews also got killed. Now it was a nest, vayaksu eschem, but still they were able to beat you. Adchor. So it says here the word vatozidu. Vatozidu, which means when you know exactly, meaning what's called amazing, when you know the haloche and you know the consequences, right? I know Shabbos, I'm allowed to turn on a light. When I know the haloche and I know the consequences, then I'm amazed. So the Mefarshim asked the following question here. We know that the definition of the word chet is b'shogeg. Chotonu means we sinned, but we didn't know what we're getting into. So slachlonu yitzreinu, chotonu tzureinu, slachlonu yitzreinu. Chet is usually, unless it's pointed out otherwise, chet means b'shogeg. Now, when the Bnoi Shlofchot come for the first time to Moshe Rabbeinu, they say like this: Ovinu meis b'midbar, our father died and our Shlofchot died. And he wasn't one of those that rebelled against you, he died with his own sin. So it's a machlokes between two tanoim. What was the sin of the father of Nairaus of Tzlofot? What was the sin? So there is one man Omar that says, Mekoshesh Hoyo. Mekoshesh Hoyo. He's the man who cut the wood on Shabbos, right? And that's what his sin was. The second man, the Omar,
min hama pilim oyo. He was one of those that went after the Jews were told not to go into Eretz Yisrael, to wait another 38 years. They decided to go right away. Now, is that the story that we are that Moshe Rabbeinu is describing right now? That the Jews decided, in spite of the fact that Hashem told them not to go, they are still going to go. You know, it's min ha'mapilim oyo. So this is a machlokes between two tanoim, whether mekoyshe shoyo or min ha'mapilim oyo. So the Mefoshim say like this: if you are going to say Slovchot mean that Slovchot was the Mekoshesh, right? Then we can understand why his sin is called a chet, not an ovoy. Chet, in other words, shogek and not amazing. Why? For two reasons. Number one, there is the Gemara says that if somebody is going to eat non-kosher food and you warn him, you say, you should know you're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. But you do not tell him that if he does, he'll get malchus, that he'll get lashes. Says the Gemara, you can't give him lashes because concerning the lashes, shogeg hu, he didn't know the consequences. You didn't warn him. You told him it's wrong, but you didn't tell him what the consequences are. Now, by the mekoshesh, it says that after they caught him, they waited to hear what his punishment is. Therefore, obviously, there was a shogeg in the act of the mekoshes, because you see that they waited to hear what the punishment is going to be. So they couldn't possibly warn him about which punishment is it going to be. That's why it's a shogeg. There's another opinion that says that the reason why the mekoshes is called a shogeg is because mekoshesh l'shem shomayim is coming. It's one opinion that says like this, that in reality, the mekoshesh really did it for the sake of heaven. Why? Because he realized that the Jews are not going to take Shabbat seriously. So he figures the only way that the Jews are going to take Shabbat seriously is if they see that the one who transgresses the Shabbat is going to get killed. So he willingly decided to die for the sake of teaching a lesson to the Jewish people. There's one opinion that says that Mekoshes L'Shem Shamayim is coming. Now, so if you hold Shlovchot Mekoshes Shoyo, it makes sense why it's called Achet, and it also makes sense why the daughters of Shlovchot are proud. He's not of the people of Adas Koira that actually rebelled against you. He's the Mekoshes. The Mekoshes is a sin, but it's a sin with a style. I mean, it's not just a rebellion. There's something to the sin. Either l'shem shomayim niskaven. There's something about the sin of the mekoshes. But what about according to the other man, the Omar, that holds Shlovchot min ha-ma'apilim hoyo, that Shlovchot was one of the ma'apilim? How does it make sense that you call the sin a shogeg, when here Moshe Rabbeinu uses the word vatozidu, which means amazing? That's the exact opposite of shogeg. Okay? So, it says like this, that what was the reason that the ma'apilim, now it's this group that decided to go to Eretz Israel, in spite of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu warned them, if you go now after the meraglim, the Emori is going to go out and destroy you, kill you completely. Did they have a doubt how reliable Moshe Rabbeinu is? Is it possible to say that they didn't believe Moshe Rabbeinu? No, Moshe Rabbeinu, you are wrong. Can be. We are going to beat them. The Meraglim just came back and said about how strong they are, how powerful they are, that even if we go all together, we won't be able to beat them, right? So now, a small group will go and they will beat the Emori. Even logically, it's impossible. Besides the fact, Moshe is telling them. Moshe never lied to them. And if Moshe said, if you go, you get killed. So, did they have any doubt that they are going to get killed?
Is this really written?
Well, Hashem said...
Where did they get the idea from?
Well, Hashem said before the chet of the meraglim, Re'ei nosati lochem esa oretz ali gerah. Hashem said to go up there. Now, if we go, we'll have to fight. So even if we have to fight to fulfill the will of Hashem. Right, Kisera said, see, when I was before the Meragli, what did Hashem say before the Meragli? Re'ei nosati lochem esa oretz, alei reish, go up and take it over. Today, they will fight against us. We are ready to fight to fulfill the word of Hashem. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, if they are saying, in other words, if they are saying we are willing to do what Hashem tells us to do, but Hashem is telling us now not to go. What's going on here? What does it mean we are ready to go because Hashem said so, when Hashem is now saying don't go? Right. The answer is the following. According to the man de Omar, that Slopo Mina Mapilim Hoyo, he had an insight into the whole parsha of the Mapilim, which is the following. What was wrong? What was essentially the chet of the Jews who accepted the report of the Meraglim? The chet was a lack of Avas Eretz Yisrael. Now, there is not enough love. There is not enough love for Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, they are perfectly willing to stay another 38 years in the Midbar. Right? Now, these people, the Ma'apilim, figure that they have to change the attitude of the Jews towards Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's interesting, it happens all the time when we hear, for instance, let's say we want to teach somebody, we want to arouse his patriotic feelings. Right? So even though before we start this story, he's very cool concerning his country. But what about if I tell him about a certain person who gave his life for his country? So all of a sudden, when you hear this story, you identify with the person that I'm telling you about, and all of a sudden you become more patriotic. Right? It happens all the time, right? So they figured like this: we are going to go, and of course we're going to die. No question about it. Moshe said so, and even if Moshe wouldn't say so, obviously they are stronger than we are. So we are going to die. But how is it going to affect the rest of the Jewish people? It's going to awaken their feelings for Eretz Yisrael, because they will see to what extent we went in order to conquer Eretz Yisrael, to go into Eretz Yisrael, even if it means dying. Obviously, that will awaken their feelings for Eretz Yisrael. Once they will awaken their feelings for Eretz Yisrael, maybe that will be mechaper, that will rectify the sin of accepting the Meraglim's report. Okay? In other words, the Tzlovchot Min HaMapilim Hoyo is the same L'shem Shomayim as the Mekoshesh, which means it's not, meaning the same way that one, the other man, the Omar, held the Mikoshesh L'shem Shomayim Oyo, right? He holds Ma'apilim L'shem Shomayim Oyo, therefore, the Benoit Slov could have a reason to be proud, right? Even though on the surface, what is the difference between Adas Korach and this group? Adas Korach went against Moshe Rabbeinu, and this group goes against Moshe Rabbeinu, but there's an enormous difference. Adas Korach is a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. Here it's going against Moshe Rabbeinu for the sake of the Jewish people. In other words, it's in order to awaken the feelings of the Jewish people. Therefore, the point is like this. Therefore, you can have amazik, which is in the category of ashoiket. What does it mean, amazik? Amazik means you know the consequences. Now, did they know the consequences or not? No question about it. The consequences. Except they said, we are even willing to pay the price of the consequences. In that, they were wrong. They shouldn't have done it. But that is a shogun. So therefore, it's no contradiction. Moshe Rabbeinu is describing the fact that they knew the consequences. So that's why he says, Vatozidu. But Benoit Slochod want to be Melamed Zechus for their father. They wanted to bring out the good point of their father. He's saying, sure, they knew what they were getting into. But look, they did it for the sake of heaven. So that's
That's why they call it Tachei. Okay, this is how the Mefoshim answer the stira between Moshe Rabbeinu's report and the Bnei Shlokho report, that they call it Tachei and he calls it Amazing.
If God makes it to Shogay because it's the same Shemayim?
That he thought, Shlokho, right, that doing it L'Shem Shemayim justifies his doing something which is wrong. That's what he thought. Now, there's the next portion of this parsha is when the Jews are told Vayomer Hashem in chapter 2 that Vanefe Vanisa Mitboro der Yamsu, and we went and we waited 38 years until finally now lately Hashem says, this is in Pasuk Gimel, Rav Lochem Service Orazeh Penu Lochem Tzofoino, you go up. And Moshe Rabbeinu goes through again in detail the prohibition against making war against Edom, against Ammon, and against Moab, but with so many details. Listen to this. Pasuk Dalet. V'eshoom tzav lemor, atem oivrim bigbul acheichem b'nei Esav. It's amazing. What do we care if it's acheichem or it's not acheichem? B'nei Esav. Acheichem b'nei Esav. Hayeshvim b'seir. Then he says, okay, Artis Gorubon, don't start up with it. Ki lo yetein lochem mi'artzom, I won't give you any piece of his land, ad midrach kaf rogel, until your footsteps goes on it. That doesn't really make sense. What do you mean? Ad midrach kaf rogel. So, say Chazal, what does it mean? Ad until midrach kaf rogel, when the footsteps of the Messiah will be heard. That's the shot. Ad, you can't take over any piece of land of Esav until Yemos HaMashiach. And at that point, you can take it over. But until Mashiach comes, you have no right to take it over. Ki Yerushalei Esav Nosat Yesar Seir. You should know that it's a Yerusha for Esav. So, we went away. And then we came derech Midbar Moab. Vayomer Hashem Ela. Al Totzer Es Moab. Don't start up with Moab. Ki Livnei Loit Nosat Yes Or Yerusha. And that's not all. Ko'enim lefonim yoshvubo. A whole story how Moab got this piece of land. In the beginning, there was a tribe called the Eni. And they were very strong. And there was a group called the Refoi. And they were also kind of king. It's the whole story how it happened that finally Moab took it over, and therefore now you have no right to move them to kick them out. And then we come to Amoy. The corrupto mu bnei Amoy. I'm reading now Posecutes. Al tetzurim al tizgobom. And again. Such a tremendous length. Moshe Rabbeinu goes. Hashem goes in order to make sure that we won't make a mistake. Chas v'shalom, and start up with Edom and Ammon and Moab. And again the same thing, because the people who used to be there were the Refoim, and they were very strong, and the Amoinim threw them out. And now the Amoim are there, so don't start up with them. So, it says like this, the Mefoshim, it says, what's really behind the Isur against starting up with Edom, Amoim, Umoyim? This question has to be answered together with another question. It says like this. Obviously, Esav, Ammon and Moab, Edom is Esav, Ammon and Moab are our relatives. In other words, we have a common ancestry. Right?
Amoy ne moyo, his Abramovin knows that common ancestry. Amoy ne moyo is Loit. Loit is Abramovin. Edoim is Yitzchok. He's a son of Yitzchok. Like, we are sons of Yitzchok. So the question is, how come there is no place where it says don't start up with Ishmael? Why is it that Ishmael isn't in the picture? Loit is in the picture, right? Esav is in the picture, but not Ishmael. Why isn't Ishmael in the picture? So it says like this. It says that the final Geula of Klal Yisrael has to come when Klal Yisrael will recognize their basic unity. That's what it says. Meaning, as long as there is Sinas, Chinom, as long as there is Zino, then the Beis Hamikdash has to be destroyed. Only through the Tikkun of Zino, which is Achdus, this is the way the Beis Hamikdash can be built. Right? Because if that caused the destruction, that's the only way that is going to cause the construction of the Beis Hamikdash. Now, the point that unites us, Klal Yisrael, is our ancestry. Meaning, what do I have in common with somebody who is also Jewish, but let's say he doesn't keep the same Torah as I do? It's not Moshe Rabbeinu that we have in common. Right? Because Moshe Rabbeinu may be my Rebbe, but it's not his Rebbe. Remember, Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu, is something that if you accept him, he's your Rebbe. If you don't accept him, he ceases to be your Rebbe. Av, a father, whether you accept him or not, he continues to be your father. You can divorce your father. You can divorce your Rebbe. You cease to be his disciple. He's not your Rebbe anymore. You can divorce your Av. So your Avdus of Avram, Yitzchak, of Yaakov, it's something that you can't shake off. This is the reason why there is the eventual unity of Klal Yisrael will be the recognition of our common ancestry, because that's the only thing that unites us. But ideologically we are not the same. What is the same? The ancestry is the same. Now, if the Torah wanted to point this out, meaning the importance of the common ancestry, right? So the best way for the Torah to do it is by saying like this: look, I'm putting next to you people who are not specially nice, they are not specially good, you don't owe them anything, but they didn't do anything for you, you don't owe them anything. There is nothing in the world that makes you have a special responsibility for them, except for one thing: they are descendants of Abraham, they are descendants of Yitzchak. Okay? That's the only thing. Now, in order to point that out, the Torah has to choose specifically nations that really have no redeeming qualities. Moab and Amoy, it says that all the redeeming qualities were already taken out from them. Rusha Moabio Venamo Amoynis. It says that the good parts of Amoy and Moab already were absorbed by Klal Yisrael. But it says that what the Gemara says, Ruth Amoyavio, Venamo Amoynis. The two women that came into Klal Yisrael, one from Amoy and one from Moab, so we actually emptied out any redeeming quality of Amoy and Moab. Edom had no redeeming quality. So if the Torah goes to such an extent as to say, but I want you to treat them specially, so what is the Torah isolating? Which point? Obviously, the only thing that could possibly justify our treating them differently. What is it? What? Fatherhood. Fatherhood, common ancestry. There is nothing else. I mean, you can say because they are special, they are not special. And still the Torah says, take care of them. Don't fight them. So what is the Torah stressing? Obviously, common ancestry. Avram and Yitzchak. So what about Yaakov? Kal v'chomer, so much more so. In other words, if the Torah is isolating that special characteristic that make, that unites us with Edom, that unites us with Ammon and Moab, so much more so we have something that unites us with Yaakov. What? Yaakov, just the opposite, we'll see. Yishmoel can't be, because what does the Gemara say about Yishmoel? Yishmoel has a redeeming quality. Yishmoel, it says in the Gemara, is Osi Lasos Tshuva. The same way that Yishmoel, before his death, he did Tshuva. The same way, before the end of days, Yishmoel will do Tshuva. In other words, Yishmoel does have a redeeming quality that Esau doesn't have. That's what it says. So according to this, it makes a lot of sense why the Torah didn't say Yishmoel. If the Torah wants to point out only the idea of common ancestry, it wouldn't make sense to choose Yishmoel, because the Torah wants to bedavka choose nations that have no redeeming qualities at all. Right? Oh, so what's the point? The whole idea, if we keep this halacha of treating Edom and Ammon u'Moab especially, what will it awaken in us? Obviously, the feeling of common ancestry. Right? If even to this going that have no redeeming qualities we have to treat especially because we have a common ancestry, so much more so a fellow Jew, that we have a common ancestry even to Yaakov, right? Remember, Edom is Yitzchok, Ammon and Moab is Avram, so much more so the fellow Jew, right? That we have a common ancestry in Yaakov. So till when, do we have to have the awareness of Ammon and Moab and Edom until Mashiach comes? That's exactly what we need in order to bring Mashiach. That awareness, because without that awareness, Mashiach can't come. Mishnah says Mashiach waits until we will recognize that common ancestry. This is the reason why Edom, Ammon, u'Moab are there, right? In order to remind us that we must find that common ancestry among us in order to bring the Mashiach, because Mashiach can't come otherwise. This is why they are waiting, so to speak, right? Edom and Ammon and Moab are waiting to tell us the lesson that the only way that Mashiach will come, like the Midrash says, Ad the Droich Kaf Rag Lechem, which means until Mashiach will come, Edom will be waiting. What does it really mean? That our awareness of the common ancestry will be waiting as a condition for the coming of the Mashiach. So that is really what's behind the stress on Edom, Ammon and Moab. The idea of isolating the point of common ancestry, the importance of common ancestry, that even gives us a clue to this low nations, Edom, Ammon and Moab. And one, that's the whole point, meaning the Ribbono Shel Olam made it in such a way that they should be our neighbors. And it says these people came and they were very strong, and I wanted them to be next to you. That's the whole point that the Torah is making, because I wanted them as your neighbors. Because if the other people will be your neighbors, then this what? And as the idea wouldn't be fulfilled.
I have to say, they were there.
That's the point. It's not a coincidence. Meaning, the Torah wants to point out, it's not a coincidence that they happen to be your neighbors. If anybody would be your neighbors, you would have to treat them the same way. Just the opposite. I made them your neighbors in order to teach you the lesson of the common ancestry. So that is the lesson of Edom and Ammon and Moab. Now,
yes. Isn't Yishmael the
girl
of Yitzhak? You said that Adam is
Yitzhak.
What
do you mean? Ishmael? Yeah,
no, like when you say Adam is
Yitzhak,
how do you...
Edomization. Common ancestry with Edom is Yitzhak. Ah. Our common ancestry with Ammon and Moab is Avraham Avinu.
But we don't have a common ancestry.
We do have, but how come in the Torah there is no halacha that points that out? So that's the answer, because Yishmoel is a redeeming quality. So the lesson wouldn't be learned through Yishmoel. If we would have to treat Yishmoel specially, it wouldn't be isolating the main point, which is Abbas Klal Yisrael. Really, the point is Abbas Klal Yisrael.
Right.
The reason why you have to treat Edom specially, in order to make you aware that you have to treat the fellow Jews specially. That's the whole point. Now, the Yisod, I mean, the Yisodos really is, I'm getting from the Shemish Moral. Now, one more very, very odd story here. The story of Oig Melech HaBosha. If you take a look in chapter Gimel, when Nathan was now there at HaBosha, Vayetzei Oig Melech HaBosha Likoseinu, and Oig came out, who? He came out, the Cholamoy Lamelchomet Rey. Vayone Hashem Eli, Al Tiro Oisoi, don't be afraid of him, says Rashi. Why does Hashem have to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, don't fear Oig? So, obviously, because Moshe, there is a reason to be afraid. Right? Meaning, if Hashem says, don't be afraid, it means that there is a reason to be afraid. The proof is, says Rashi, ubesichon lo yutzach loimar. See, by Sichon, Moshe wasn't told, don't be afraid. And by Oig, yes, so that means that there is a reason to be afraid. What is the reason? Elo, misyore hoyo Moshe, because Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid. Shelo tamod lo. Zechus, because there is a special merit that Oig Melech HaBosha has, Sheshimesh LaAvrom, because he did a service to Avraham Avinu. Sheneemar, Vayovoi HaPoli, the person who ran away from the war of the four kings against the five, and came and told Avraham Avinu that his nephew was in prison, according to the Kabbalah, that bullet is Oig. So therefore, since he did such a service for Avraham Avinu, therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is a good reason to be afraid of him. That no matter how many Zechuyos Klal Yisrael has, and Moshe Rabbeinu has, but Oig, he told Avraham Avinu that Lot was in prison. So, in the obvious questions are, I mean, fine, it's a Zechus, but how can then overweigh the Zechuyos of Klal Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu? It's hard to understand. Besides, there is a second half to this Chazal that Rashi brings down that Rashi ignores. And the second half is, you know why Oig was such a nice guy and came and told Avraham Avinu that the Lot was caught? Well, he had a very interesting plan in his mind, that Avraham Avinu will go after the kings, and obviously he will die. If he will die, Sarah will be available for him to marry. So he's not a tzaddik anyway. I mean, so not only is it very difficult to understand, even assuming that it is a zechus. I mean, how can it be such a zechus when there's such an ulterior motive that the whole plan was how to get rid of Avraham Avinu? So you can say, yeah, but still a good thing came out of it. But it seems so small in comparison to the Moshe Rabbeinu and the zechus of Klal Yisrael that Moshe Rabbeinu has to fear it. So, the matter becomes even more complicated if we take a look here in the Yalkut Shimoni, here on the spot. It tells you other few anecdotes concerning Oig Melech HaBosha. Ksiv says, "Vayas Avraham Mishte Godoil," when after Yitzhak was born, a few years after Yitzhak was born, Avraham Avinu made up a very big party. Oig v'chol gedoil lo v'imoy nishte godoil, so he darshans, even the godoil was there, and that was the big man.
right? And if you say the big man, everybody knew who the big man was. That's Oyd Melech HaBoshan. He was at the party. Mishte Godoy. Omru le'Oyd. So somebody, so people told Oyd, what's happening here? Loi ho yiso Oymer. Avron Puredo Akorohu Ve'eno Moili. Everybody started teasing Oyd Melech HaBoshan. Didn't you always say that Avraham Avinu is like a Predo? A Predo can't have any, what do you call it? Did you have a horse? What is a mule? A mule. He's a mule! So if he's a mule, and a mule can't have children, you all used to say that. Omar Lohem. If I put a finger on him and I'll kill him. And he said, what's the answer? What's the answer, really? No, that is as if. And what's the point that Og used to tell everybody Avram can't have any children? What's really happening over here? Another one. Mice. The other mice is that Yaakov Avinu comes to Paro. And who was there? Oyd Melech HaBoshan.
Yeah.
Oyd Melech HaBoshan is there. So somebody tells Oyd Melech HaBoshan, didn't you say that Avraham Avinu can't have children? Look, 70 people are coming into Mitzrayim. So they are already a whole group. So again, it makes kind of a, some kind of a remark like, so what, big deal, I can step all over them. And then finally, Moshe Rabbeinu meets this man, Oyd Melech HaBoshan. And he came and he saw him. In Ulrich Raglov, he only saw how he was sitting on the wall of the city, and his feet were hanging down. He saw his feet. So when he saw his feet, also shone Yole Moshe. So what happened? So he, Oyd Melech HaBoshan, Toilesh Har, he tried to pick up a mountain to throw it at Klal Yisrael, the Zoyer Klal Yisrael. And this is when Moshe Rabbeinu killed him. Okay, this is the story. now, in the... So it's a few stories that really must have something in common. The story of Og telling Avraham Avinu to that Lot was caught. There is the story of Avraham Avinu and his party and Oyd Melech HaBoshan being teased. How you see that you were wrong? He has children. And the same thing with Paro. And we have the other medrash that's brought down here in Pasha's Dvorim. In the Targum Yonasan, right here on the spot, the Targum Yonasan brings it down. In Posuk Yudalet, Kirak Oyd Melech HaBoshan Nishar Miyeser HaRefoyim. So says the Targum Yonasan on the spot, only Oyd Melech HaBoshan remained from the flood, from before the flood. That is the famous Midrash that usually doesn't really make sense, that not only Noah and his three sons were saved by the marble, but even Oyd Melech HaBoshan, except that he was saved by the outside of the boat, and Noah and his three sons were saved from the inside of the boat. What's really happening? Now, it says in Sforim that what is the basic difference between the nature of men before the flood and the nature of men after the flood. The basic difference is that man before the flood is a ben odom. Men after the flood are called bnei noyach. What is the difference? Odom was created a single one. One person. Odom and Chavod, it's one unit. Noyach was like a second creation of the world, in a certain way. The world was destroyed and recreated, so to speak. But it was recreated as a group. Not as one man. It wasn't Noyach that was saved. It was a family that was saved. It's a group that was saved. And the Mefarshim point out the organized life, Shvotim, living together, Mishpocho, Shevet, Am, doesn't exist. The concept doesn't exist before Noyach. The concept of people getting together in a homogeneous form, right, forming one nation, that doesn't exist before the Mabul. Why? Because before the Mabul, man is basically self-sufficient, because he's Odom, he's a self-sufficient person. He can survive anything. Of course, it came to such a point that the best of them, okay, of course there are degrees, not everybody's at the same level, but the best, qualitatively speaking, as far as the capacity of survival, they came to such a degree that they even thought that they were B'nai Elohim. And that's how it's described, B'nai Elohim. So some Midrashim say that they were actually B'nai Elohim, that there was something supernatural about some of the people before the generation of Noah. But there are Midrashim that say no, that the people were so self-sufficient, meaning they didn't need other people. And when you are self-sufficient to such a degree, you actually start thinking that you have divine characteristics. This is why the Torah calls them B'nai Elohim. Now, this B'nai Elohim, because of their complete self-sufficiency, therefore that self-sufficiency became so corrupt that nothing could stop them. Because if I don't need you, then eventually you can be a barrier to my desires. So this is why that generation, the self-sufficiency caused the complete corruption of the generation of the flood. And part of the punishment was, from now on, man cannot be self-sufficient. He has to survive in a group. Noah, with his three sons, with a family, it can't be one person anymore. And the Malbim says on the spot that man becomes weaker after Noah. Before Noah, he's every human being is like a giant, healthy, strong, he can do everything by himself. So, that characteristic, the characteristic of self-sufficiency, is lost by the Mabul. But in a certain way, but still we are descendants of those people. So even though it wasn't the essential part of the characteristics of Noach and his three sons, but in the Chichonios, you know, their essence is becoming a group, right? Which is dependent on each other. More, the Chazal even say that our dependence on animals was much less before the Mabul than after the Mabul. As a matter of fact, Hashem didn't even allow us to kill an animal to eat food. Why should we? It's a lack of self-sufficiency, needing animals to survive. So if the animal dies, it's Rashi's opinion that you can eat it. But to go kill an animal for me to eat? No. That's only after the Mabul, in order to point out how dependent we are. We are even dependent on the food that other animals give us. But a little bit of the original nature was brought over even after the Mabul. Whether the Midrash means literally that Oig Melech HaBoshon was actually, he held on to the outside of the table, or the Midrash means in the classical Midrashic style that Oig Melech HaBoshon
is the only remnant of the original state of man. It doesn't mean that he actually physically lived before the Mabul and he actually attached himself to the table, right? When the Gemara says that it was impossible to survive, it was a nizah, the table survived. That's how strong the rain was. It's hard to imagine that Oid Melech HaBoshan could have survived outside of the table. So, but it's irrelevant whether the Midrash means it literally or the Midrash means it in a figurative form. It doesn't matter. The idea is Oid Melech HaBoshan belongs to before the Mabul. Okay, you said either way, it doesn't matter whether physically he is the man from before the Mabul or it means Oid Melech HaBoshan, who was born after the Mabul, hid the nature of those people before the Mabul, but whatever you say, he survived the Mabul. Okay? So, this Oid Melech HaBoshan, since he was the only remnant of absolute self-sufficiency, he became, after the Mabul, the symbol of the highest level, the highest human form that nature can produce. The highest form. In other words, he saw himself as a one-man master race. An actual master race. A man who was unbeatable. And people tried to beat him. And he always survived. He's always a bully, right? He's always surviving. Either physically he survives the Mabul, right? If you take the Midrash literally, survives the Mabul. He survives the war of the four kings against the five kings. He survives the war that's described in our parsha against Amoy. Amoy throws him out, right? He used to be in Ammon, in Rabbas Bnei Ammon, Rabbat Ammon, right? And it says that his bed is still there, it says in the Torah. And his bed is made out of iron, because as a baby he was so strong that had it been made out of wood, he would have destroyed it. That's what it says. That's how incredibly superhuman he was. Even as a baby, he was self-sufficient, he could get out of his crib. Right? So, this is what we know about Oid Melech HaBoshan. Now, because of that nature of Oid Melech HaBoshan, he wants to establish what he is into a race, Le'olam Avoy, forever. In other words, he doesn't want that with his death it should be the end of what he represents. Okay? Now, Avraham Avinu is, in a way, Oleg's counterpart. It is the spiritual master race. Meaning, don't forget that it's hard to use these words, but in a way, there is to it something. I mean, Avraham Avinu is the chosen person. He's chosen, right? And obviously he wants to maintain what he is. He wants to give it over to his children and to pass it to his children's children. But he has somebody competing against him. Oid Melech HaBoshan is his competition. He is a physical superman. Avraham Avinu is a spiritual superman, and Oid Melech HaBoshan is his counterpart in a physical sense.